Had enough? They asked. Ready to talk? I started to answer, but I choked and gagged. I saw him reach out again with the rod. I burst into pieces and died. They were leaning over me. Someone said, "He's coming around, watch him, he might be violent." The old man's face was over mine. His expression worried. "Are you all right, son?" he said, anxiously. I turned my face away. "One side, please," another voice said. "Let me give him the injection." "Will his heart stand it?" "Certainly, or I wouldn't give it to him." The speaker knelt by me, took my arm, and gave me a shot. He stood up, looked at his hands, then wiped them on his shorts. They left bloody streaks. I felt strength flowing back into me. Gyro, I thought absently, or something like it. Whatever it was pulling me back together. Shortly I sat up, unassisted. I was still in the cage room, directly in front of that damnable chair. The cage, I noticed without interest, was closed again. I started to get to my feet. The old man stepped forward and gave me a hand. I shook him off. "Don't touch me." "I'm sorry," he answered. Then snapped, "Jones, you and Ito, get the litter. Take him back to the infirmary. Doc, you go along." "Certainly." The man who had given me the shot stepped forward and started to take my arm. I drew away from him. "Keep your hands off me." He stopped. "Get away from me, all of you. Just leave me alone." The doctor looked at the old man, who shrugged, then motioned them all back. Alone, I went to the door. Through it, and on out through the outer door, into the passageway. I paused there, looked at my wrists and ankles, and decided that I might as well go back to the infirmary. Doris would take care of me, I was sure, and then maybe I could sleep. I felt as if I had gone 15 rounds and lost every one of them. "Sam! Sam!" I looked up. I knew that voice. Mary hurried up and was standing before me, looking at me with great sorrowful eyes. "I've been waiting," she said. "Oh, Sam, what have they done to you?" Her voice was so choked that I could hardly understand her. "You should know," I answered, and found I had enough strength left to slap her. "Bitch," I added. The room I had was still empty, but I did not find Doris. I was aware that I had been followed, probably by the doctor. I wanted no part of him, nor any of them just then. I closed the door. Then I lay face down on the bed and tried to stop thinking or feeling anything. Presently I heard a gasp. I opened one eye. There was Doris. "What in the world?" she exclaimed and came over to me. I felt her gentle hands on me. "Why, you poor, poor baby." Then she added, "Just stay there. Don't try to move. I'll get the doctor." "No." "But you've got to have the doctor." "No, I won't see him. You help me." She did not answer. Presently I heard her go out. She came back shortly, I think it was shortly, and started to bathe my wounds. The doctor was not with her. She was not more than half my size, but she lifted me and turned me when she needed to, as if I'd been the baby she had called me. I was not surprised by it. I knew she could take care of me. I wanted to scream when she touched my back, but she dressed it quickly and said, "Over easy now. I'll stay face down." "No," she denied. "I want you to drink something. That's a good boy." I turned over, with her doing most of the work, and drank what she gave me. After a bit, I went to sleep. I seem to remember being awakened later, seeing the old man and cursing him out, A doctor was there, too. Or it could just as well have been a dream. Miss Briggs woke me up and Doris brought me breakfast. It was as if I had never been off the sick list. Doris wanted to feed me, but I was able to do it myself. Actually, I was not in too bad shape. I was stiff and sore, and felt as if I had gone over Niagara Falls in a barrel. There were dressings on both arms and both legs where I had cut myself on the clamps, but no bones were broken. Where I was sick was in my soul. Don't misunderstand me. The old man could send me into a dangerous spot, and had done so more than once, and I would not hold it against him. That I had signed up for. But I had not signed up for what he had done to me. He knew what made me tick, and had deliberately used it to force me into something I would never have agreed to, had I not been jockeyed into it. And after he had gotten me where he wanted me, he had used me, unmercifully. Oh, I've slapped men around to make them talk. Sometimes you have to. But this was different. Believe me. It was the old man that really hurt. Mary? After all, what was she? Just another babe. True, I was disgusted with her to the bottom of my soul for letting the old man talk her into being used as bait. It was all right for her to use her femaleness as an agent. The section had to have female operatives. They could do things men could not. There have always been female spies, and the young and pretty ones had always used the same tools. But she should not have agreed to use them against another agent, inside her own section. At least, she should not have used them against me. Not very logical, is it? It was logical to me. Mary shouldn't have done it. I was through. I was finished. They could go ahead with Operation Parasite without me. I'd had it. I owned a cabin up in the Adirondacks. I had enough stuff there in deep freeze to carry me for years. Well, a year anyhow. I had plenty of Tempest pills and could get more. I would go up there and use them, and the world could save itself or go to hell without me. If anyone came within 100 yards of me, he would either show a bareback or be burned down. I had to tell somebody about it, and Doris was the goat. It may have been classified information, but I did not give a hoot. It turned out that Doris knew all about Operation Parasite. There was no reason to try to keep any part of it secret. The trouble was to make it not a secret. But I am ahead of myself. Doris was indignant. Shucks, she was sore as a boiled owl. She addressed what they had done to me. Of course, as a nurse, she had dressed a lot worse, but this had been done by our own people. I blurted out how I felt about Mary's part in it. "You know that old slaughterhouse trick?" I asked her. "Where they train one animal to lead the others in? That's what they got Mary to do to me." She had not heard of it, but she understood me. "Do I understand you that you wanted to marry this girl?" "Correct." "Stupid, ain't I?" "All men are about women, but that's not the point. It does not make any difference whether she wanted to marry you or not. Her knowing that you wanted to marry her makes what she did about 8,000 times worse. She knew what she could do to you. It wasn't fair." She stopped massaging me, her eyes snapping. "I've never met your redhead. Not yet. But if I ever do, I'll scratch her face." I smiled at her. "You're a good kid, Doris. I believe you would play fair with a man." "Oh, I'm no angel. I've pulled some fast ones in my time. But if I did anything halfway like that, I'd have to break every mirror I own. Turn a bit, and I'll get the other leg." Mary showed up. The first I knew about it was hearing Doris say angrily, "You can't come in." Mary's voice answered, "I'm going in. Try to stop me." Doris squealed. Stay where you are, or I'll pull that hen of hair out by the roots. There was a short silence, sounds of a scuffle, and the smack of someone getting slapped, hard. I yelled out, "Hey, what goes on?" They appeared in the doorway together. Doris was breathing hard and her hair was mussed. Mary managed to look dignified and composed, but there was a bright red patch on her left cheek, the size and shape of Doris's hand. She looked at me and ignored the nurse. Doris caught her breath and said, "You get out of here. He doesn't want to see you." Mary said, "I'll hear that from him." I looked at them both, then said, "Oh, what the hell. Doris, she's here. I'll talk to her. I got some things to tell her in any case. Thanks for trying." Doris waited a moment, then said, "You're a fool," and flounced out. Mary came over to the bed. "Sam," she said. "Sam, my name isn't Sam. I've never known your right name." I hesitated. It was no time to explain to her that my parents had been silly enough to burden me with Elihu. I answered, "What of it? Sam will do." "Sam," she repeated. "Oh, Sam, my dear. I am not your dear." She inclined her head. "Yes, I know that. I don't know why. Sam, I came here to find out why you hate me. Perhaps I can't change it, but I must know why." I made a sound of disgust. "After what you did, you don't know why? Mary, you may be a cold fish, but you aren't stupid. I know, I've worked with you." She shook her head. "Just backwards, Sam. I'm not cold, but I'm frequently stupid. Look at me, please. I know what they did to you. I know that you let it be done to save me from the same thing. I know that I'm deeply grateful, but I don't know why you hate me. You did not have to do it. I did not ask you to do it. I did not want you to do it." I didn't answer. Presently she said, "You don't believe me?" I reared up on one elbow. "I believe you. I believe you have yourself convinced that that is how it was. Now I'll tell you how it was." "Do, please." "You sat down on that trick chair knowing that I would never let you go through with it. You knew that. Whether that devious female mind of yours admitted it to itself or not. The old man could not have forced me into that chair, not with a gun, not even with drugs. But you could. You did. You were the one who forced me to go through with something which I would rather have been dead than touched. A thing that now leaves me dirty and spoiled. You did it." She had grown steadily whiter as I talked, until her face was almost green against her hair. She caught her breath and said, "You believe that, Sam?" "What else?" "Sam, that is not the way it was. I did not know you were going to be in there. I was terribly startled, but there was nothing to do but go through with it. I had promised." "Promised," I repeated. "That covers everything. A schoolgirl promise." "Hardly a schoolgirl promise." "No matter. And it doesn't matter whether you're telling the truth or not about knowing that I would be in there. You aren't, of course, but it doesn't matter. The point is, you were there, and I was there. And you could figure what would happen if you did what you did do." "Oh." She waited a bit, then went on. "That's the way it looks to you, and I can't dispute the facts." "Hardly." She stood very still for a long time. I let her. Finally, she said, "Sam, once you said something to me about wanting to marry me." "I remember something of the sort. That was another day." I didn't expect you to renew the offer. But there was something else. A sort of corollary. Sam, no matter what you think of me, I want to tell you that I am deeply grateful for what you did for me. Miss Barkis is willing, Sam. You understand me? This time I grinned at her. A female to the very end. Honest, so help me. The workings of the female mind continue to delight and astound me. You always think you can cancel out the score and start over with that one trump play. I continued to grin at her while she turned red. It won't work, not this time. I won't inconvenience you by taking up your no-doubt generous offer. She continued to blush, but she came back at me in a steady, level voice. I let myself in for that. Nevertheless, it's true. That, or anything else I can ever do for you. My elbow was going to sleep. I sank back and lay down. Sure, you can do something for me. Her face lit up. What? Go away and quit bothering me. I'm tired. I turned my face away. I did not hear her leave, but I heard Doris come back in. She was bristling like a fox terrier. They must have passed in the hall. She faced me, fists on her hips, looking cute and adorable and very indignant. She got around you, didn't she? I don't think so. Don't lie to me. You went soft on her. I know, men always do. The idiots. A woman like that, all she has to do is shake her fanny at a man, and he rolls over and plays dead. Well, I didn't. I gave her what for. You're sure you did? I did. I sent her packing. Doris looked doubtful. I hope you did. Maybe you did. She wasn't looking too pert as she came out. She dismissed the matter. How do you feel? Pretty good. It was a lie, Nat. Want some massage? No. Just come here and sit on the bed and talk to me. You want a cigarette? Well, as long as the doctor doesn't catch me. She perched up on the bed. I struck cigarettes for both of us and stuck hers in her mouth. She took a deep drag, swelling out her chest and pushing her arrogant breasts against her halter, almost to the breaking point. I thought again what a sweet dish she was. She was just what I needed to take my mind off Mary. We talked for a while. Doris gave her views on women. It appeared she approved of them on principle, although she was not in the least apologetic about being one herself. On the contrary, take women patients, she said. One of the reasons I took this job was because we don't get a woman patient once in the coon's age. A man patient appreciates what's done for him. A woman just expects it and hollers for more. Would you be that sort of patient? I asked, just to tease her. I hope not. I'm healthy, thank the Lord. She crushed out her cigarette and jumped off the bed, bouncing a little. Got to get out of here. Scream if you want anything. Doris? Yes? You got any leave coming up? I plan to take 2 weeks shortly. Why? I was thinking, I'm going on leave. At least, I've got a shack in the Adirondacks. How about it? We could have a nice time and forget this madhouse. She dimpled. You know, that's mighty white of you, partner. She came over and kissed me full in the mouth, the first time she had done so. And if I weren't an old married lady with a pair of twins in the bargain, I might take you up. Oh. Sorry, but thanks for the compliment. You've made my day. She started for the door. I called out, Doris, wait a minute. When she stopped, I added, I didn't know. Look, why don't you take me up on it anyhow? The cabin, I mean. Take your old man and the kids up there and give them a good time. I'll give you the combo and the transponder code. You mean that? Of course I do. Well, I'll talk to you later. Thanks. She came back and kissed me again, and it made me wish she had not been married, or at least not working at it. Then she left. The doctor came in a bit later. While he was fiddling with the futile things doctors do, I said, "That nurse, Miss Marsden, is she married? What business is it of yours? I just wanted to know." "You keep your hands off my nurses, or I'll fit you with mittens. Now stick out your tongue." The old man put his head in late that afternoon. My immediate response was pleasure. The old man's personality is hard to shake off. Then I remembered, and went cold. "I want to talk to you," he started in. "I don't want to talk to you. Get out." He ignored my remarks and came in, dragging his bad leg. "Mind if I sit down?" "You seem to be doing so." He ignored that, too. He wrinkled his face and scowled. "You know, son, you're one of my best boys, but sometimes you're a little hasty." "Don't let that worry you," I answered. "As soon as the doctor lets me out of here, I'm through." I had not really decided up until then, but it seemed as necessary as syrup with buckwheat cakes. I no longer trusted the old man. The rest was obvious. He was not hearing anything that he did not choose to hear. "You are too hasty. You jump to conclusions. Now take this girl, Mary." "Mary who?" "You know who I mean. You know her as Mary Cavanaugh." "You take her. You jumped all over her without knowing the score. You've got her all upset. Matter of fact, you may have ruined a good agent for me." I'm in tears about it. "Listen, you young snot. You don't have any call to be rough on her. You don't know the facts." I did not answer. Explanations are a poor defense. "Oh, I know what you think you did," he went on. "You think she let herself be used as bait to get you to take part in that job we did. Well, you've got it slightly wrong. She was being used as bait, but I was using her. I planned it that way." "I know you did." "Then why blame her?" "Because, although you planned it, you couldn't have carried it out without her active cooperation. It's mighty big of you, you no-good heartless bastard, to take all the blame, but you can't." He did not hear my profanity either. He went on. "You understand everything about it but the key point, which is the girl didn't know. Hell's bells, she was there." "So she was. Son, did you ever know me to lie to you?" "No," I admitted. "But I don't think you would hesitate." He looked pained and answered, "Maybe I deserve that. I'd lie to one of my own people if the country's safety depended on it. I haven't found it necessary up till now, because I've been choosy about who works for me. But this time the country's welfare doesn't depend on it. And I'm not lying. And you'll just have to test it for yourself. Any way you can figure out. And make up your mind whether or not I'm lying. That girl didn't know. She didn't know you were going to be in that room. She didn't know why you were there. She didn't know that there was any question about who was going to sit in that chair. She didn't have the faintest suspicion that I didn't mean for her to go through with it, or that I had already decided that you were the only party who would suit me, even if I had to have you tied down and forced, which I would have done, if I hadn't had a double whammy up my sleeve to trick you into volunteering. Hell's bells yourself, son. She didn't even know you were off the sick list." I wanted to believe it. so I did my damnedest not to believe it. If it were a lie, it would be just the shape of lie he would tell. As to whether he would bother to lie, well, getting two prime agents back into the groove might be something he would class, just now, as involving the country's safety. The old man had a complex mind. "Look at me," he added. I snapped out of my brown study and looked up. "There is something else I want you to know, and I want to rub your nose in it. First off, let me say that everybody, including me, appreciates what you did, regardless of your motives. I'm putting in a letter about it, and no doubt there will be a medal in due time. That stands, whether you stay in the section or not. If you go, I'll help you with any transfer or such you want." He paused for a breath, then went on. "But don't go giving yourself airs as a little tin hero. I won't, because that medal is going to the wrong person. Mary ought to get it. Now hush up. I'm not through. You had to be forced into it, like building a fire under a mule. No criticism. She had been through plenty. But Mary was a real, honest-to-God, Simon Pure volunteer. When she sat down in that chair, she didn't know what was going to happen to her. She didn't expect any last-minute reprieve, and she had every reason to believe that, if she got up alive, her reason would be gone, which is worse. But she did it, because she is a hero, which you miss by a couple of points." He went on without waiting for me to reply. "Listen, son, most women are damn fools and children, but they've got more range than we've got. The brave ones are braver, the good ones are better, and the vile ones are viler, for that matter. What I'm trying to tell you is, this one is more of a man than you are, and you've done her a serious wrong." I was so churned up inside, I could not judge for the life of me whether he was telling the truth or manipulating me again. I said, "Maybe so. Maybe I lashed out at the wrong person. But if what you say is true, it is. It doesn't make what you did any sweeter. It makes it worse." He took it without flinching. "Son, I'm sorry I've lost your respect, but I'd do it again under the same circumstances. I can't be choosy about such things any more than can a commander in battle. Less, because I fight with different weapons. I've always been able to shoot my own dog. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. But that is what my job takes. If you are ever in my shoes, you'll have to do it too." "I'm not likely to be." "Why don't you take leave, rest up, and think about it?" "I'll take leave. Terminal leave." "Very well." He started to leave. I said, "Wait." "Yes?" "You made me one promise, and I'm holding you to it. About that parasite, you said I could kill it. Personally. Are you through with it?" "Yes, I'm through with it. But..." I started to get out of bed. "No buts. Give me your gun. I'm going to kill it now." "But you can't. It's already dead." "What? You promised me." "I know I did. But it died while we were trying to force you, to force it, to talk." I sat down and started to shake with laughter. I got started and could not stop. I was not enjoying it. I could not help it. The old man grasped my shoulders and shook me. "Snap out of it. You'll get yourself sick." "I'm sorry about it, but there's nothing to laugh at. It couldn't be helped." "But there is," I answered, still sobbing and chuckling. "It's the funniest thing that ever happened to me. All that is all for nothing. You dirtied yourself, and you loused up me and Mary, and all for no use." "Eh? Whatever gave you that idea?" "Eh? I know. I know everything that went on, and you didn't even get small change out of it. Out of us, I should say. You didn't learn anything you didn't know before. The hell we didn't. And the hell you did. It was a bigger success than you'd ever guess, son. True, we didn't squeeze anything out of you directly before it died, but we got something out of you. Me? Last night. We put you through it last night. You were doped, psyched, brainwaved, analyzed, wrung out and hung out to dry. The parasite spilled things to you, and they were still there for the hypnoanalysts to pick up after you were free of it. What? Where they live. We know where they come from. I can fight back. Titan. 6th satellite of Saturn. When he said it, I felt a sudden gagging constriction of my throat, and I knew that he was right. You certainly fought before we could get it out of you, he went on, reminiscently. We had to hold you down to keep you from hurting yourself. More. Instead of leaving, he threw his game leg over the edge of the bed and struck a cigarette. He seemed anxious to be friendly. As for me, I did not want to fight with him further. My head was spinning, and I had things to get straight. Titan? That was a long way out. Mars was the farthest man had ever been. Unless the Seagraves expedition, the one that never came back, got out to the Jovian moons. Still, we could get there, if there were a reason for it. We would burn out their nest. Finally, he got up to go. He had limped almost to the door when I stopped him again. Dad? I had not called him that in years. He turned and his face held a surprised and defenseless expression. Yes, son. Why did you and Mother name me Elihu? Why, it seemed the thing to do at the time. It was your maternal grandfather's name. Oh. Not reason enough, I'd say. Perhaps not. He turned again, and again I stopped him. Dad, what sort of person was my mother? Your mother? I don't exactly know how to tell you. Well, she was a great deal like Mary. Yes, sir, a great deal like her. He turned and stumped out without giving me any further chance to talk. I turned my face to the wall. After a while, I steadied down. This is a personal account of my angle of view on events known to everybody. I'm not writing history. For one thing, I don't have the broad viewpoint. Maybe I should have been sweating about the fate of the world when I was actually stewing about my own affairs. Maybe. But I never heard of a man with a blighty wound caring too much about how the battle turned out. Anyhow, there did not seem much to worry about. I knew that the president had been saved under circumstances which would open up anybody's eyes, even a politician's, and that was, as I saw it, the last real hurdle. The slugs, the titans, that is, were dependent on secrecy. Once out in the open, they could not possibly hold out against the massive strength of the United States. They had no power except those they borrowed from their slaves, as I knew better than anybody. Now we could clean up their beachhead here. Then we could go after them, where they lived. But planning interplanetary expeditions was hardly my job. I knew as much about that subject as I knew about Egyptian art. When the doctor released me, I went looking for Mary. I still had nothing but the old man's word for it. But I had more than a suspicion that I had made a big, hairy thing of myself. I did not expect her to be glad to see me, but I had to speak my piece. You would think that a tall, handsome redhead would be as easy to find as flat ground in Kansas, She would have been had she been a member of the inn staff. But she was a field agent. Field agents come and go, and the resident personnel are encouraged to mind their own business. Doris had not seen her again, so she said, and was annoyed that I should want to find her. The personnel office gave me the bland brush off. I was not inquiring officially. I did not know the agent's name. And just who did I think I was, anyway? They referred me to operations, meaning the old man. That did not suit me. I had no more luck and met with even more suspicion when I tried the door tally. I began to feel like a spy in my own section. I went to the biolab, could not find its chief, and talked to an assistant. He did not know anything about a girl in connection with Project Interview. The subject had been a man. He knew he had seen the stereo. I told him to take a close look at it. He did and said, "Oh, were you that guy? Pal, you sure took a beating." He went back to scratching himself and shuffling reports. I left without saying thank you and went to the old man's office. There seemed to be no choice. There was a new face at Miss Haynes' desk. I never saw Miss Haynes again after the night I got taken. Nor did I ask what had become of her. I did not want to know. The new secretary passed in my ID code, and, for a wonder, the old man was in and would see me. "What do you want?" he said grumpily. I said, "Thought you might have some work for me," which was not at all what I intended to say. "Matter of fact, I was just fixing to send for you. You've loafed long enough." He barked something at his desk phone, stood up and said, "Come." I felt suddenly at peace and followed him. "Cosmetics?" I asked. "Your own ugly face will do. We're headed for Washington." Nevertheless, we did stop in cosmetics, but only for street clothes. I drew a gun. My own had gone where the woodbine twineth, and had my phone checked. The door guard made us bare our backs before he would let us approach and check out. Then we tucked in our shirts and went on up, coming out in the lower levels of New Philadelphia, the first I had known as to the location of the section's new base. "I take it this burg is clean?" I said to the old man. "If you do, you're rusty in the head," he answered. "Keep your eyes peeled." There was no opportunity for more questions. The presence of so many fully clothed humans bothered me. I found myself drawing away from people and watching for round shoulders. Getting into a crowded elevator to go up to the launching platform seemed downright reckless. When we were in our car and the control set, I said so. "What in the devil do the authorities in that dump think we are doing?" I could swear that at least one cop we passed was wearing a hump. Possibly. Even probably. "Well, for crying in church, what goes on? I thought you had this job taped, and that we were fighting back on all fronts." "We're trying to. What would you suggest we do about it?" "Why, it's obvious. Even if it were freezing cold, we ought not see a back covered up anywhere. Not until we know they're all dead." "That's right." "Well, then, look, the president knows the score, doesn't he? I understand that..." "He knows it." "What's he waiting for? For the whole country to be taken over? He should declare martial law and get action. You told him a long time ago." "So I did." The old man stared down at the countryside. "Son, are you under the impression that the president runs the country?" "Of course not. But he is the only man who can act." "They sometimes call Premier Tsvetkov the prisoner of the Kremlin. True or not, the president is the prisoner of Congress."
"You mean Congress hasn't acted?"
"I have spent my time the past several days, ever since we stopped the attempt on the president, trying to help the president convince them. Ever been worked over by a congressional committee, son?" I tried to figure it out.
Here we sat, as stupid as dodos walking up a gangplank to be slugged. Yes, and Homo sapiens would be as extinct as the dodo if we did not move. Presently the old man said, "It's time you learned the political facts of life. Congresses have refused to act in the face of dangers more obvious than this one. This one isn't obvious until a man has had it in his lap, the way we have. The evidence is slim and hard to believe. But how about the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury? They can't ignore that." "Can't they? The Assistant Secretary had one snatched off his back right in the East Wing, and we killed two of his Secret Service guards. And now the Honorable Gent is in Walter Reed with a nervous breakdown and can't recall what happened. The Treasury Department gave out that an entire..."